good morning. Is it morning? Yes, it is morning. And it was one of those mornings when I got up and my little puppy dog looked at me like, do we really have to go outside? Can't I just do my business in the living room? But we took him outside. I think it was three degrees when we went out this morning. It was bad. Hey, guess what we have today? Yes, you're right. We have James Anderson. Hey, James, welcome to the show.
Hello, Glenn. How are you?
I'm good. All right. Well, we've got all sorts of things to talk about today. I guess we're going to talk about beavers. We're going to talk about Buckeye Chuck. We're going to talk about some bass. We're going to talk about all sorts of stuff today. So where do you want to start?
I guess we could start with Groundhog Day since it's coming up here soon.
Let's do that. Groundhog Day is Wednesday. Day, right?
Yes.
Now, they still have the thing out at WMRN, yes. I guess. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And you were telling me that there might be some confusion about whether Buckeye Chuck is a little boy Buckeye or a little girl Buckeye at one point.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, so Coast Exotics, they're the ones who provide the groundhog for the event. So,
oh, don't tell anybody they provide the groundhog. He lives there, doesn't he?
Well, he lives at the facility.
Yeah, yes. Okay, all right.
But yeah, sometime, for the last couple of years, it was a girl. And then a few years ago, it was a boy. So it does fluctuate. So,
but do they have a mental or a medical doctor that comes in and tells them that, or how do you tell the difference in those things? Do they have the parts?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So being a mammal, yeah.
Okay.
They have.
Oh, that's right. They're a mammal.
Yeah,
of course.
And they have the girl parts. So, yeah. But when you're looking at them for their other physical appearances, they look very similar.
Now, are the little boys bigger or are the little girls bigger?
So for groundhogs, males are typically a little bit bigger.
Is that
about a couple pounds?
Is that usually true amongst mammals?
Yes, amongst mammals, yes, typically the males are bigger. And when it comes to birds and fish, typically females are.
Is that right? I didn't know birds, the female.
We have to think about it because they need more space for their eggs.
Oh, of course they do, yeah.
So, and I'm not saying every bird species or every fish species, but I guess if you say in general.
I have a pair of cardinals that have spent the winter so far with us.
Okay.
And they look the same size to me, but
males are probably just a few
grams
a tad
more.
Bigger.
Yeah. Okay.
When it comes to birds of prey, like bald eagles, and all, you can really tell the difference. Especially if they're sitting right by each other, you can really compare.
Now, like a bald eagle, which has the white head, do both the male and the female have the white head?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. But not the juveniles, right?
Yeah, the juveniles have a dark head, and when they're their first year, they're primarily that brownish black gray color, and then as they get older, they get more and more white. It takes about 4 to 5 years for them to have full white or bald head.
How long do they live?
So in the wild, they can typically live about 10 years on average, but then in a captivity, I think about almost close to 30 years.
Wow.
So of course, most animals live longer in captivity. There are a few that don't.
It's like amazing how much predators will cut down your lifespan, huh?
Well, it's not just predators, but I mean...
Diseases?
Diseases, I mean competition, weather, I mean just all the elements. But of course, you know, in captivity, they don't have to work as hard, you know. They have that person that's coming to them and bringing them food. And
like me.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that I'm retired.
Yeah, there you go.
I have that person that brings me food and does all the work for me.
Good way to look at it.
All right. So talk to me about Buckeye Chuck. I never know whether if he sees his shadow, it's going to go 6 weeks longer.
Six more weeks of colder winter. And if he doesn't see his shadow, warm spring is around the corner.
Okay, so if he doesn't see his shadow, that means the sun's up. That will remind me of warmth, so there'll be more warm spring coming earlier. Is that right?
Yes.
If he does see his shadow, there's more spring. Spring's coming earlier.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I had to think about it for a moment.
Yeah, that really didn't help anybody the way I explained that. Okay.
But yeah, it's a tradition that Charlie started in 1979. Yep. So, he's been our state groundhog, and of course, one Punxsutawney Phil that's been there since the beginning.
Yeah, it's over 100. It's in the 1800s.
Yes.
The
yeah.
1860 something.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah. Then I want to say there's at least 4 or 5 other states a groundhog.
Oh, there are more than that. I've looked it up.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and I think
they're 9, I think.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be in the teens now, I think.
Okay.
And some of them are just kind of jokes, and other ones are serious, like Buckeye Chuck.
Like Buckeye Chuck and Pucks Donnyville. Yeah. It's kind of like Michigan and Ohio.
That's right.
The big rivals.
Now, Buckeye Chuck, I believe I heard Buckeye Chuck has a better batting average than Punxsutawney Phil.
That's what they say. I think Buckeye Chuck has a 75% accuracy. I forget what Punxsutawney Phil's is.
It's in the 60s, but it's much lower than Buckeye.
And sometimes it's funny. Sometimes they'll agree with their predictions, and other times it's Punxsutawney Phil says one thing and Buckeye Chuck says another thing.
Does the longitude and latitude make a difference?
I would probably have some.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, it's probably, I don't know, 120 miles from here, Punxsutawney, I guess. I don't know.
And of course, the funny tradition about the Punxsutawney Phil is the original one, and they give it a special Kool-Aid to make him last this long. And I always joke, I said, well, if that was true, we'd be all drinking that Kool-Aid.
Yeah, well, that's kind of interesting. Kool-Aid was around in the 1860s. No, I don't think so.
Probably
maybe it was
fruit juice that they found out in the wild.
Okay. Kool-Aid paid to have that name put on there, right? Okay. So, now there are, you were talking about Buckeye isn't the only prognosticator as far as species go.
Yes,
right.
Yeah, we actually have, there's two other animals here in Ohio that we look upon when it comes to our weather forecasters. The one that does we do around Groundhog Day as well is called Benny the Bass. I was looking it up, and I told Glenn for all this time, I thought
Betty.
It was Betty the Bass, but no, it's Benny the Bass.
I prefer Betty. Yeah. It sounds kind of World War II-ish.
Yeah.
Betty the Bass. Okay, it's Benny.
So when I looked it up, it's around Buckeye Lake region, so think of eastern Ohio, and their tradition is they give Benny the Bass some bait. So this is something that he'll eat, and if he doesn't eat it, it's 6 more weeks of colder winter, and if he does eat the bait, then that means a warmer spring is around the corner.
Hmm. And I'm sure that's scientifically based.
Yeah. Now, I know that one has not been around forever, so
yeah.
I forget how old Minnie the Bat is. And then in the fall time, up in Vermilion, Ohio, out by Cleveland, they have the Woolly Bear Caterpillar Festival. So they look at the bands, and they say, okay, if the winter is going to be harsh or if it's going to be mild.
Well, isn't that based on fact, though?
There has been some research, yes, and in New York in the early 1900s. And
not that Buckeye Chuck is not based on fact, but yeah.
And they have found some correlation with the bands and all, but it hasn't been 100% accurate. And then, of course, I love when the people find the all black ones and they're all freaking out and they're sending pictures or saying, oh no, we're going to have the worst winter ever. Well, I said, that's an entirely different species. I said, that's actually the giant leopard moth.
Oh my.
And they're supposed to be all black. The ones that we typically see are the banded woolly bear caterpillars, or when they transform to their moth form, this is the Isabella tiger moth.
Okay. And if I get a runny nose like I have right now, it means that spring will be here shortly.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. So there's a fish and a worm.
A caterpillar.
A caterpillar, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's not a worm at all. It will turn into a moth, right? Yeah. And then Buckeye Chuck. Yeah.
So that's what we have in Ohio. I know other states probably have some other traditions, so.
And they're all based on fact, of course.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, why did you knew Charlie pretty well? Did he ever tell you why he decided to do that?
Yeah, he said that he was tired of everybody putting that full focus on Punxsutawney Phil, and he just said, you know what? Ohio needs its own groundhog, and he really pushed at it. Through state legislature.
Yes.
And, yeah, he was really able to be successful about it.
So. He is a legislated prognosticator.
Yeah, yes. He is.
And does pretty well if he's in his 70%. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm liking Buckeye Chuck. Now, that's Wednesday, and I'm not going to advertise the other station, but it is on the other station in town, and they usually have a gathering in the morning, right?
Yeah.
What do you know what time it usually is?
So the event runs from 7 to 8 o'clock.
Okay.
I'm usually there a little earlier because usually the newscasts come in and
find out whether he's dead or alive.
Oh, that too. But the prediction starts at 7:40. Now they are going to do some things different. Since everything's going on, I think they're not going to do the sandwiches this year. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. Those were
the spam sandwiches.
Spam sandwiches. Yeah. Yeah.
So just keep in mind some things could be different. So.
Yeah, you don't want to get sick because you're watching Buckeye Chuck in 2 degree temperatures. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. I've been on both ends of the spectrum with weather when it comes to prediction, because I've been doing it for the last 6 years. I've been in where it's almost felt like 2 degrees, and then I've had it where it's felt like 53 degrees.
Yeah, that's the way it is around here.
I saw, as of right now, the weather's supposed to be 42 with a little bit of rain. So I'm like, all right, let's.
Yeah, a little bit of rain. My phone says it'll be 39, but 42, we'll take 42.
It's above freezing, that's all.
Yeah, we've had a lot of below freezing. I think this year is unusually cold, but I'm not positive of that. Now, that was one of the things I was talking over with my executive producer, what I should talk to you about, and Buck and my little mammal told me that I should ask him, does ice cold weather like we've had, does that affect the animals a lot?
Yeah.
Does it?
So right now, especially in these very cold temperatures.
Sub-zero sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They go through what's called torpor, which is temporary hibernation.
Okay.
So squirrels, chipmunks, raccoons, opossums. So right now they're just kind of hunkered down. They're kind of staying low. And then once we get the little warm spell, then they come out of that little temporary hibernation.
Huh.
But their heart rate and all doesn't really go dramatically down like bears and groundhogs and bats like we've talked about before.
Right. Now, I've noticed in my backyard, as you know, I have gone back to feeding the birds because I thought...
That's good, especially this time of year.
Yeah, this time of the year, you know, if there's a disease going around, I'd rather have them live because they didn't die of starvation than die because they have an eye disease or something like that. But I keep feeding the birds. I never see them, but my bird feeder keeps going down, 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 down.
They're out there.
They must be, but they must either come before I get up, which is 7-ish.
You'll be surprised. I usually see them about close to 6 o'clock or sometimes before then.
So. Okay, now is the during the warmer time of the year, I see them during the day all the time, but I don't see birds during the day. Why not?
Well, it all depends on the weather condition and then if it's windy or not.
Okay.
But other than that, I mean, depends on your feeder. Sometimes my bird feeder's icing all day long.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Well, now, I must have birds coming to my... I have a suet... and I must have birds coming to that because I put one out a week ago and now it's gone.
Oh, okay.
And I watched it get smaller and smaller and smaller and never saw a bird at it. Now I did see the squirrel underneath. He does not get up on that, or at least he didn't when I was watching, but he does like taking whatever drops down onto the ground below it. So, yeah.
And of course, raccoons and opossums will take advantage of bird feeders. So.
They will?
Oh, yeah.
They can climb up like that?
Climb, or like what you mentioned, whatever drops on the ground.
Yeah.
But yeah, raccoons, they're excellent climbers.
They'll really?
Climb. Oh, yeah.
Oh, now the things, the squirrel, I thought maybe I'd won my battle because I never see the squirrel up on the bird feeder. I bought a new bird feeder that if too much weight gets on it, it drops down and it closes so he can't get into the thing.
Yeah.
But he's down below on the ground munching away.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. Well, can he, do you suppose he can get up and get on that bird feeder and eat?
If they're talented.
They are talented. I've seen the YouTubes on them.
Oh, yes. Chipmunks. They'll definitely.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, and chipmunks are lighter, so that.
Depending on the feeder, a lot of them, they can take advantage of that.
Yeah, and I do have chipmunks. I had not seen a chipmunk in years, and last year I sit out in my watch my garden grow. That's what you do when you get retired. I watch my garden grow, and I started seeing chipmunks, and I have several chipmunks around. So maybe they're the ones that are doing all the damage.
It could be.
No, well, all right. Well, I've been trying to kind of give you a little bit of a soft lead into the next critter, which we have all sorts of stuff on our desk here. the Beavers.
Yes.
And you have had a week of Beavers, have you not?
Yes, a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. We were very successful. We had an actual Beaver program.
Yeah, and you saw them.
And we saw them. And, you know, that never happens. Half the time when I'm like snakes, you know, when I'm doing a snake program, I hardly see any.
Well, if I go with you, I want to go on that snake program.
But, the Beavers, and I told the audience before, I said, listen, I said that we have a good chance of seeing them, but I can't guarantee we will. And sure enough, we went to the second bridge. They're out by her road. And, looked like the large male. He had to be at least 60 pounds. I mean,
wow, that's
huge.
Big.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, the one out by her road, it's on the south side of the lake, is it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, right there where apparently a creek feeds into the lake. Or the lake feeds out into the creek.
Yeah,
I don't know which.
Part of Big Island.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, they were very industrious the last time I saw them in building whatever you call those things.
Their dam?
Yeah, their dam there. So what was he doing when you found him?
So what I think he was doing is what beavers do is they have two cache piles or store piles for their food for the winter. They have an underwater pile, and then they keep ones above the water. And so he was on top of his pile that was above the water, and he was angling the stick. So I think he was storing his food.
Huh.
I couldn't 100% say, but at least that would have been my best guess. And the reason why they have the underwater entrance, because if it's solid ice like it is right now, I was just there yesterday,
yeah.
And they have an underwater entrance of their lodge, and they'll grab their food, and then they'll bring it up. And in their underwater entrance.
So they eat it not underwater, they eat it above.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they can chew underwater.
Can they?
Yeah.
Huh.
But they can't really eat underwater, yeah, or they would swallow water and drown or aspirate.
Yeah. Yikes. Well, so, excuse me, I'm verklempt here. The people that, how many people do you have? 10 or 12 people?
We had 6 people.
Oh, good.
So we had a one-and-a-half-year-old girl that came out.
Oh,
so that was really
that
nice.
Did she get thrilled by seeing the beaver?
She did. And then our other young girl, she's probably at least 3 or a little above 3.
Oh, she's an old girl.
Yeah. She actually pointed out the beaver, because at first I'm like, well, we don't see any beavers, guys. And she said, what's that? And I'm like, oh, yeah, there he is.
Is she, now you have added her to all of your walks, I assume.
Well, it's funny. She comes out to our outdoor preschool program in the summertime.
Okay, so cool.
Yeah. Her and her grandma does.
Well, it's really fun to hear about that. Now, does your son go on your hikes with you quite often?
Sometimes he does.
He's quite an active young man.
This time of year, not so much, since we kind of live over in Eastern Morrow County.
Oh, okay.
By the time I'm over at work, he's just getting off the bus.
Plus, he's practicing free throws.
Yes, that's right. But during the summertime, yeah, he comes to a lot of my programs.
Yeah. He's going to grow up knowing a lot about critters, isn't he?
Yes, and I tell you what, he definitely knows more than what I did at his age.
Yeah,
I didn't
sure.
know some of that stuff till I was in college, at Hawking College.
Yeah.
So him able to identify some stuff at already 6 years old, I'm like, oh my.
Well, now you've got 3 things here that are related to beavers.
I actually got 4 things.
Four. The pelt, the critter, and the skull. Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Tracks.
Yeah, you got his paw print. Yeah, let me see. Oh, before you do that, is there any small animal in this area that has a cloven hoof?
A cloven hoof. Deer are our only hoof mammals.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Well, and then wild boar, but that's in southern Ohio.
Yeah, and we wouldn't have that in
Marion, unless it was a hog that was feral from a farm.
I could have sworn the other night I was out with my dog about 5 days ago. We were out, and there was a trail of paw prints or hoof prints, and I could have sworn they were cloven hoofs, but maybe Cupid was in the area or something. I don't know. Anyway, okay, you've answered my question, but now you've got a picture of a, well, it's kind of a...
It's a little replica.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little plastic, rubbery mold. So.
Yeah, a mold of, that's a beaver paw?
Yeah, so this is the
front. Oh, they have Sharpie things.
This is their front paw, so this is great for grasping onto trees because they will drag logs into their water source for their lodges and their dams, and sometimes those logs can be up to 10 feet long.
Yeah, you told me, and I thought maybe they'd be an inch around, a diameter. No, they're big.
Yeah, they are big.
How do they do that? Well, 60-pound, you said maybe a 60-pound beaver, I suppose they could pull.
Well, between their hands and also their very strong
teeth,
they
get look
a
at those
large,
teeth.
Grasp, and they're able to drag.
He's showing me a picture of a skull of one, and that those teeth must be at least an inch to an inch and a half long, right?
Yes.
Yikes.
So, and the reason why they're orange, no, it's not because of bad hygiene. It's actually it's full of iron, and it's very important, especially for beavers, because what do beavers...
So they're that color when they're alive, huh?
Yeah, when they're alive. And it's not just beavers, groundhogs, muskrats, rabbits, mice. They'll also, since they're in that rodent group, they'll have those orange teeth because they have to chew on hard structures. Now, their front teeth never, ever stop growing. They're incisor teeth.
Oh.
So the thing is, they have to chew on something hard. Well, luckily, beavers, since they chew on wood, they don't have to worry about that too often. But things like groundhog and muskrats... They don't chew on trees very often, but they do have to chew on something hard because what can happen is they can get what's called malocclusion, which means the top teeth can grow all the way down, the bottom teeth can grow all the way up, and then they can't open their mouth.
Ooh.
And then they starve to death.
Yeah, ooh.
So that's why it's very important if you got a pet gerbil or hamster or rabbit, I always tell people to give them something hard to chew on, usually like a canning ring or a piece of wood.
A canning ring?
Yeah, you know, like a ring you put on a mason jar, like that.
Oh, yeah,
ring.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
That will help keep their teeth gnawed down.
And that doesn't, if I chewed on that, that would make my teeth hurt.
Yeah, and that's what makes our teeth a little bit different. So, But their back teeth, luckily, don't do that. I mean, they stay there permanent. Now, what's cool about beavers is, like we talked about earlier, if they're underwater, even above water, so to prevent from... wood chips getting back into their throat, they actually have a special, and I know this is a skull, but imagine there's a skin flap that kind of protects the teeth, the bottom, or the back molars here, and so it prevents them from eating wood chips.
But it causes them to have sleep apnea.
I guess it could. So.
Now, are their teeth really sharp, the back ones?
I'm going to say very sharp, but their front ones are just basically designed to really gnaw down on that or chew that wood up. But then the back teeth are just, they're very hard, so I mean, able to grind.
They're herbaceous, aren't they?
Yeah, they are strictly herbaceous or herbivores, so they do not eat any form of meat.
Yeah, okay. Now, is that also true with the woodchucks?
Yeah, with groundhogs and muskrats. They are primarily herbivores.
Yeah. Now, if they were in a time of starvation, would they... attack like a little mouse or something like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess if they were extremely hungry, maybe.
I don't know.
Now, squirrels, I don't realize squirrels will eat small baby birds.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I'm going to be mad at my squirrels if I see them messing around with my baby birds in the area. All right. Well, now, my squirrels just attack my bird feeder. That's all they attack, so I'm not worried about them. Okay, now what is this critter here?
Oh, so this is just a puppet of a beaver, so when I'm talking about beavers with the kids, I just love showing it to them because this just shows what they would look like when they're in life. So, of course, their weird-looking tail.
Yeah, why is their tail flat?
So, for a few reasons. The one reason is for steering, for swimming.
Oh, sure.
Also, too, as we talked about, they make their lodges and dams, so it's one way how they pack in that mud down.
Oh,
and I always laugh because, you know, we people, when we build things, we have to use so many materials and so many tools, but beavers, all they have is their little hands, their strong teeth, and their weird-looking tail, and yet they make such amazing structures.
Now, do they just weave those structures, or do they use mud to hold them together?
So, when it comes to the dams, what they'll actually do, they will create a foundation. A lot of times it will be mud, or sometimes they will stuff rocks down, and then they'll put mud on top, and then they'll put the sticks on top.
Okay.
They are probably nature's greatest engineer that we have out there. And in some ecosystems, they are actually known what's called a keystone species. So I know it's probably a word you probably haven't heard a lot.
Only in Pennsylvania.
Only in Pennsylvania.
The keystone state. Yeah, okay.
So a keystone species is a plant or animal, is usually the animal, that's basically the glue and so it's holding that ecosystem together. So with beavers making their dams, they cause those water levels to get a lot higher.
Sure.
So it creates more habitat for fish and waterfowl and nesting sites for birds. So I always say beavers are not just an animal, they're an ecosystem.
Well, and as a matter of fact, we haven't you had to destroy their dams because they do cause that problem?
Yes, they can be a nuisance, not just for people, but because they're damming up one area and causing water levels to get higher, they're causing other areas to get lower.
Nothing, yeah. And so kill the turtles.
That can hurt some other wildlife. So, yes, some beavers, I guess how you can look at it, can be good and can be bad.
Sure. Now, I just mentioned turtles. Are turtles awake now?
No, they are hibernating. They are now.
There's a difference between some turtles are underwater and other turtles are land only?
Yes, like the box turtles, they are strictly on land. They cannot swim. If you put a box turtle, it'll drown.
Oh my gosh.
It's just how they're designed. They're more dome shaped versus the turtles are more broad, more flat, so they're designed to swim.
So the ones that kids buy at the pet store,
those are primarily aquatic or semi-aquatic.
Okay.
Now there are like the tortoises. Those are only strictly land. Tortoises are not aquatic at all.
Okay.
So
don't put them in the water then. Yeah. Right.
So some of the turtles are hibernating on either the edge of a wetland or pond or lake, and then some, like you mentioned, are actually underneath the water.
Yeah.
Snapping turtles and painted turtles are an example right now, and you're probably wondering, well, how do they breathe? Because, yes, they do have lungs. So what it is they have a special layer of calcium on the top layer of their shell. And so as they're hibernating, that calcium layer starts to dissolve very slowly and releases oxygen throughout the body and keeps them going. But there's a catch. As it's doing that, it's releasing other chemicals, and it's making the muscles very, very tight. Uh-huh. So it's basically one giant Charlie horse cramp.
Yikes.
And so that's why in usually early mid-March, when we get a nice little warm spell, you'll see so many turtles out on a log.
Stretching.
Yeah. And they're trying to bask and get rid of that cramp, because if they don't, then they drown.
Yeah.
But painted turtles are the greatest example of that. Snapping turtles do it a little bit, but they actually have some special folds in their skin which absorb the oxygen in the water. But the other catch is, too, when you're especially in a small pond environment, you've got other turtles, you've got insects, you've got plants, you've got all kinds of living things that are absorbing all that dissolved oxygen, so they're all competing. So eventually, that's going to run out.
Yeah.
So that's why we have those long, continuous winters. Like a few years ago, we had it last till May. A lot of times, they can't hurt their population.
Oh, my. Well, it reminds me of Bull Durham, the movie. Didn't he absorb oxygen through his eyes or something like that? Anyway, that's another story. It probably has nothing to do with life as we know it. So then you have a pelt
there. Yes, very large pelt.
I am stunned at how thick the hair is on that.
Yeah, so especially this time of year, they really need that thick fur. They have actually two layers of fur. That top part is like an oily coat. And if you ever feel it, yeah, your hands do feel a little greasy because the water helps repel off of
sure.
their fur. And then if you fold it, you'll see how very dense it is and how thick it is. So that's what really, really keeps them warm. And also, too, while we're talking about their tail also helps them thermoregulate as well. They store fat, and it kind of burns off.
Is there hair on their tail?
No, their tail, well, it's very, very fine.
Yeah.
It's not very hairy like the rest of the body.
Well, it's kind of like my son's back. Okay.
Yeah. Now, we were talking about the oils in the tail. So that's actually where they get the oil. They have a special gland. It's called a castor gland. And they use those little hands, and they spread it all over their bodies.
Is that where we get castor oil from?
A little bit, but actually, they do use, and I don't know what product uses it or if they do anymore, but we do use beaver oil in flavoring. The FDA approved it because it has a vanilla smell. And
where do you get beaver oil from, do you?
Different...
Milk a beaver?
kind of the special surplus stores, I have seen them.
Okay.
They're very, very pricey. But if you're ever out in the wild, especially Tallgrass Trail, and if you smell just a hint of vanilla, actually could be a sign of a beaver. Because what beavers do to mark territories, they will make a pile of a mud called a castor pile, and then they spray it with that oil. And
this is my territory.
Yeah, it's my territory.
Yeah. Huh. That's interesting. Now, I don't think I've ever seen a little mound like that. Next time I go out in the trail with you, you have to point that out.
I will admit, at Tallgrass Trail, we don't have any castor piles because it's mainly rocky.
Yeah.
But around Big Island, there are quite a few castor piles I have found.
Huh. Oh, darn.
And they are the largest run in North America. They can get up to 100 pounds.
Oh, my. That would be a large beaver.
Yes. Yeah. And with their fur, they have very, very well-prized. Not much today, but we have to remember in the 1718, early 1900s, their fur was very important, and especially with the industry, because actually a lot of our towns, even in Ohio, were developed because of the beaver population, because people would use their pelts and, you know, sell it to markets.
Yeah. Isn't there a town named Beaver?
It probably is. Yeah.
I think there is.
But this would really would show that you had a lot of money, a lot of wealth, if you were wear a beaver coat.
More so than mink?
Yeah, yeah. Their beaver was definitely more prized than mink and muskrat. Usually mink and muskrats were usually scarves or hats, and beavers was mainly for coats.
Well, they're smaller animals, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it was really sad. By 1836, they believe the last beaver was kicked out of Ohio because we overharvest them, caused to destruction of habitat. And then they don't believe till 1936, they believe that they were spotted back into the state. So we went over 100 years without beavers.
So now, do we have a surfeit of them, or
yeah,
is it just
mainly in eastern Ohio? That's where they're mainly found. Uh-huh. Just the type of habitat that's available. But here in Marion, we do have a low population, especially Tallgrass Trail, Big Island Wildlife Area. And I do want to quote, because I get people ask me, there is a wildlife area just outside city limits on 739. It's called the Beaver Wildlife Area. No, it's not dedicated to the animal beaver. It was a name, I think his name was Jim Beaver. He was a local conservationist, Pheasants Forever. When he passed away, he gave it to them, and then ODNR helps manage that property.
Great name for a wildlife area.
Yeah, though. Yeah, the Beaver Wildlife Area. But yeah, everybody thinks it's because of the animal, and it's because of the person.
Well, now, are beavers allowed to be trapped or hunted now?
Yes, in the state of Ohio. There is a season. Actually, the season's actually, I think, right now. I can't remember a beaver, but a lot of our fur bears are in selected counties, like river otters, mainly like in eastern Ohio. But I can't remember if beavers, if you can legally trap them in Marion County.
Now, can you hunt them, or is it trapping only?
I mean, you're only going to be successful by trapping.
Oh,
but,
okay. Yeah, it'd be hard to shoot one. They're not that big.
But I guess if they were out of the water, I don't know if you had an opportunity and had the right permits and licenses, I don't know. I guess you might be able to legally hunt them or shoot them.
Don't do it, though.
So
let them alone.
So for beavers, you have to use a giant trap. It's called a conibear. So kind of think like a giant mouse trap, the traditional mouse trap. So when they go through this special trap, then it snaps and hits there.
Kills them that way?
Yes.
As opposed to trapping them in a box.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh,
it's a lethal trap, yeah.
Oh,
it's not a live trap.
Oh, you have a name for that stuff.
Yeah.
Lethal trap. Okay, this makes it sound much better than a killer trap. Okay,
so no, I've never hunted beaver before, or trapped beaver before.
That pelt is just absolutely beautiful. You can understand why people would want to have that, and with the two layers of fur. That definitely would keep you warm, I bet.
But, you know, it's funny. Not much of the coats, but I noticed with the hats, they'll shear it. They'll shear the the top layer because of that oil.
Oh.
I guess you wouldn't like wearing a greasy hat.
Get grease off my head.
Well, that's true. That's true. But most people don't want to wear a greasy hat, so they get rid of that top layer, and then they keep that bottom layer.
So. How about Betty the fish?
About Benny the Bass?
Benny the Bass. Do they have a coat that people like to? No, never mind. I was being silly. Well, we've only got about 10 minutes, so let's continue our discussion on beavers. How about that? And then we'll change when we switch over. How many beaver are estimated to be in Ohio? Do you know?
I think it's about close to 2,000. At least.
Okay.
Now, I know that sounds like a large number, but if you were to talk about pre-settlement times, that number would have been double.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound like a large number to me.
No, unfortunately.
And the only place that we have them out of the east side of Ohio is here, or?
Yeah, they're less abundant, I guess, the more west you go, especially in northwestern Ohio, because it's primarily an agricultural area.
Yeah.
But yeah, in southeastern, northeastern, and southwestern Ohio, they're pretty abundant.
What is their habitat? What do they like?
So they have
water.
Yeah, they've got to be around water. Now, when it comes to water, it could be a creek, stream, a pond, or a wetland. As I was mentioning before, here in Marion County, like Tallgrass Trail and Big Island Wildlife Area, but on the eastern half of the county, last fall when I did a program with the environmental students for River Valley, I can't remember what creek is right there, right by the high school. There were signs of beaver dam right there.
Huh, that's interesting. Now, if I would assume, since we're trying to save the wetlands north of us up by Sandusky,
yeah.
I would guess there have to be some beaver up
there.
Yeah,
I would say there probably would have to be a more abundance of beavers, especially in Lake Erie.
Yeah. Now, there is an awful lot of chemical runoff up there, as we know from the algae blooms and stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Which probably isn't good for them, is it?
No, no.
Yeah.
It's toxic to them.
Yeah. Now, what's their number one predator?
Well, other than humans, around here would be primarily coyotes.
Okay.
Hawk,
if they weigh 60 pounds, a coyote's going to have a tough handle.
Yes. Yeah. Now, when we're talking, we're talking about like a young beaver.
Yeah.
Eagles, bald eagles.
Really?
Yep. They will attack.
Go for a little one,
yeah,
I
like
assume.
A younger
a
one,
baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, not in Marion County, but more eastern Ohio, river otters are known to prey upon young baby beavers.
Huh.
Then, of course, in the western part of the U.S., wolves, mountain lions, grizzly bears, wolverines.
Yeah. Grizzly bear will eat whatever he wants to.
But yeah, mainly here in Ohio, coyote would be their top natural predator.
And we do have a lot of coyote around, don't we?
Do.
Yeah. Now, has coyote become a species that we're trying to get rid of?
Well, it's kind of yes and no. A lot of people don't realize coyotes are not really native to Ohio.
Oh, they aren't?
No. So what happened was, when pre-settlement times, we were primarily very thick with forests. We had a lot of other natural predators like wolves. Well, when people came to Ohio, we destroyed a lot of that.
Sure.
Forested habitat.
Chopped down those trees.
Yes, made it very open, rather for agricultural or development. Well, also, too, we killed a lot of the wolves out of Ohio.
Because they're bad.
Yeah, because they were bad against agriculture. And it wasn't until about 1857 the last wolves were killed. And so when the wolves are kicked out and their habitat is more open, then coyotes say, hey, I'm going to move to Ohio. So they believe by 1919, the first one was spotted in the state in Preble County, which is clear on the western edge of Indiana and Ohio.
Okay.
Then they think by 1942-43, they believe they were here in Marion County. So they haven't been here terribly long.
No, but they're liking it.
Yeah.
And we have a lot, don't
we? Yes,
they
are everywhere, and they're considered what's called a nuisance species. Groundhogs and coyotes are that, even though they're native, but they can be called what's called aggressive, so that means they're overpopulated. And then, of course, the wild boar, which is an invasive, it's also called a nuisance species.
I have not seen a wild boar in the wild. I've seen them in
zoos. Well, hopefully you never do, because, boy,
they're mean.
Well, they're mean, and they can really hurt you.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to climb a tree to basically get away from
them. I don't climb trees anymore. Now, I think I saw a coyote this winter on my street.
Yeah.
Would that happen?
Oh, yeah.
I live in town.
Yeah. Coyotes are one of the very few animals that are very adaptable in urban environments, and they actually don't know why, but they're actually thriving.
Oh.
Versus most wildlife don't really thrive. I mean, they're there, but they're not thriving. Cottontail rabbits is another one that's thriving, and there's something going on, and of course, you know, they are, you know, with close to us, so they're, you know, they wanting food.
Yeah.
They may get into our trash. I do warn people, you know, this time of year, that or any time of year, you know, don't let your small dogs or your cats out at night. You know, keep them in at night.
Or they'll be dinner.
Oh, yes, they could be dinner. Now, this is their breeding season right now, and there's the old myth that they're specifically targeting your pets right now because they're automatically hungry. Well, they're hungry any time of year. It's not just this time of year.
They look hungry. They're skinny.
They are.
Yeah.
They are. Now, it depends on what coyote. I've seen some very plump coyotes
Have you?
Around tall grass.
Well, now, I'll give you the particulars of where I think I saw, and I'm not saying I actually saw one, because I couldn't honestly say I know what a coyote looks like. I've seen one that I know was a coyote. My son pointed him out to me. But I was walking my dog. We had just gotten my dog, so it was late fall, I think. Yeah, anyway, Buddy and I were walking, and we did a little extra long walk, and there was a trash bin, trash bins knocked over. And I looked at it, and I thought, boy, something's moving there. And sure enough, this big, what I thought was a skinny German Shepherd, blonde, looked up at me, and I thought, that's an odd-looking animal. And so we kept going and turned around and left. But could that have been a coyote?
Yes, it could have been.
Are they blonde usually or brownish?
It just depends on genetics. I've seen some that are very more dark, and I've seen some that, like you mentioned, are more blonde.
Yeah. And he was about the size of a German Shepherd.
Yes.
Would that be right?
Yeah. There were, I would say, maybe a tad smaller than German Shepherd.
Well, yeah, he wasn't as big.
But and a lot of people get confused with German Shepherds and coyotes because they're about the same coloration.
Oh.
But if you ever pay attention how they run, coyotes run with their tails down. You ever yell at your pet dog and, you know, they tuck their leg?
Yeah, yeah.
In between their legs. Well, then dogs run with their tails up.
I do that too when my wife yells at me. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, pay attention next time if you see one running.
That's only the second, and I'm putting this in air quotes because I'm not sure it was a coyote. That's only the second one I've ever seen in the wild. So,
yeah, 3 or 4 years ago, I know I've mentioned this on the station on Silver Street there by Fred's Ice Cream. I was going from Tallgrass Trail to the county building, and I saw a coyote running around.
What would be?
He's probably was around Fred's Ice Cream looking for leftovers.
There you go. Yeah. Everybody likes a sugar cone. What would be a definite identification thing for a coyote? Is there a specific thing like...
Well, other than the running, but if they're not running...
The running,
It can be hard, because like you said, you might have thought it was a domestic dog.
I really did think it was.
The other thing, I mean, it's not the most predominant way to identify a coyote, but like you were mentioning how scrawny it was.
It was
but
scrawny.
If you had a pet dog, a pet German Shepherd that has an A for a while, I mean, that can go well. German Shepherd typically are a little bit more darker, especially around the face. Okay. Coyotes are typically not, but, you know, genetics can always change that.
This one really did look like a skinny German Shepherd. I was shocked at when I saw him. And then as we were walking away, because we didn't want to get close to whatever was eating the garbage, I thought, that might be a coyote. But
it's possible.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, we're down to our last couple of minutes.
You know what?
Oh, yeah.
When you're talking about that, don't be scared. I know you probably might have been scared. But
I was scared for my dog.
For your dog.
Yeah.
You know, I always tell people, not just coyotes, but all wildlife, you're more likely to be attacked by a domestic dog or a person than you are a wildlife.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I always just tell people, if you do encounter coyote in the wild, you know, look bigger, look more intimidating. You know,
fall down and curl up and act like you're dead, right?
Actually, you don't want to do that, because then they'll say, well, hey, that's an easy free meal. I wouldn't do that.
I never understand how somebody thinks that that's the way to avoid a bear.
They say that about grizzly bears, but that's the thing. Again, you don't want to do that. You want to look tougher than the bear
and
or the coyote.
Slowly but surely back away.
Yeah. And always keep your eyes
really
on it. Because,
oh, they don't like that.
Well, that, and you know, they can change their behavior very quickly.
Yeah.
And never turn your back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of predators will ambush and jump on
you. Sure. It's an easy way to get you down.
And,
right.
And don't run, because then you trigger predator prey response. So you're running, that coyote or grizzly bear or mountain lion says, oh, well, hey, that's a meal. He's running away.
Definitely reach in your pocket and pull out the bear spray. That's the best thing to do. Well, we're down to the last 45 seconds. We'll be back. Got any idea what we're going to talk about in the next group of... Or are we just going to shoot the bull?
We're just going to shoot the bull. We're going to wing it.
All right. Well, that pelt is just beautiful. And I was stunned when you brought it in and I saw it. I really thought this might have been a stuffed one. It's a puppet, you say?
Yeah. Okay. I call him Wilbur.
Wilbur.
Wilbur the Beaver. Kids love him.
I'm sure they do. All right. Well, hey, folks, you're listening to WWGH here at 107.1, and you're listening to On the Air. No, yes, that's the name of it. On the Air here at on my show. I'm Glenn Coble, and we've got James Anderson, the Marion County Naturalist, and we'll be talking to him after we
you're
get back.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, the talking place for legendary